This Three Beards Media podcast may contain mature themes, and if you're not down with that, we got three words for you. Like the podcast. Nailed it! Would
you like to sample some of my nuts? Hey everybody, welcome back to a new episode of Old Man Strength. I am your host, Chris Shipley, along with my co-host, Aaron Wall. Aaron, what's up, man?
Me, barely. I'm exhausted, Chris.
Traveling, daylight savings time, all that other shit.
I was in Las Vegas for a trade show from Thursday to yesterday. I got home at roughly midnight, 12:30 last night. And in those five or so days, I think I got a grand total of 16 hours of sleep.
Nice.
So pretty tired. It's a testament to the show, the Old Man Strength, and, I'm powering through, recently, you know, this will date the podcast a little bit, but I don't care. You know, Toby Keith died and he had that song that I'm as good once as I ever was.
Yeah.
I don't know how I used to do this kind of stuff all the time when I was in college.
Right.
Because it has zapped all of my energy for at least the next couple days.
My buddy Jeff, had his retirement party on Saturday. And so we went to the retirement party, and then we all decided we were going to go to this bar that we used to go to when we were like in our mid-20s. So we go to Johnny's Hall of Fame, and it's like 9:30, and I'm like, dude, I got to go home, man. Like, I'm exhausted. I'm not sure how we did this all the time.
I know. It's incredible. It's the recovery period isn't nearly as fast as it used to
be. No, it's not.
Pretty fortunate that I can drink a whole bunch,
right,
and not get hangovers. So my recovery is just being tired. But yeah, it's still not as easy as it used to be.
Well, this show's starting off on a bang. I clicked on the wrong destination, and I'm apparently streaming our show to the Sigh of the Storm Twitter account and not Old Man Strength. So if you're on here looking for Brent or Marcus, sorry, you guys are stuck with us. So.
I thought I was the one that was exhausted.
I know, right? You want to introduce our guest?
Sure. We've got a very important guest tonight, in part because if you're on Twitter and you're an Iowa State person, you will learn a ton of things, historically speaking, from this person. I'm excited to dig into exactly what they do, how they got there, and all of that. So we're going to go right to it. Today we have Mike Green, the director of the ISU Letter Winners Club, joining us.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good, Aaron's barely functional.
Yeah, I see that.
I'm here.
I can feel his pain on recovery time, so I know exactly what he's going through.
Right? You know, you probably have to go to events where you have to schmooze and do some things like that, and this was like 5 days straight of that.
Yeah.
You know.
It takes its toll, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Mike, Aaron gave you a brief introduction, but why don't you fill in some gaps for some of our listeners about Mike Green?
Yeah, well, I've worked for the Iowa State Athletics Department almost 30 years now. I started in 1995, actually. I started grad school at Iowa State, and I got lucky. I started working in it used to be called Sports Information, and now it's called Athletics Communications. So I started working in that office in 1995, and I worked there 26 years. And a couple years ago, I decided to kind of changed career paths a little bit, and I moved over to the Letter Winners Club, and I'm enjoying life there. But I mean, yeah, I've been a part of Iowa State athletics for close to 30 years now, and I've seen a lot of stuff, and I grew up a Cyclone fan, and you know, I always tell people, you know, you work a lot of hours, you probably don't make a lot of money, but you get a good seat and you get to watch your favorite team play, and it's not a bad gig.
No, not at all. So you got a little seniority on Coach Fennelly then.
Coach Fennelly got hired 2 weeks before I started.
Oh, he's got
you 2 weeks. So we basically, I mean, I always like tell people, how long have you been here? Well, Coach Fennelly. So I always use that example. But yeah, no, I was actually at his one of his early press conferences, and that was like one of the first things I did in our office. Yeah. Yep. And that shows you how long I've been there. So
well, so let's start with there. Let's start with Coach Fennelly real quick, because you know it's timely. He's going for his second straight Big 12 tourney championship. And honestly, I mean, if you would have told me at the end of last year when they lost a few people and whatever else that we'd be in that position again, I'd be a little shocked. But talk about a little bit about the early years of when Coach Fennelly was there and what he's been able to accomplish.
Well, the one thing I always tell people, like if you ever count a Coach Fennelly team out, you're not very smart. The guy is one of the greatest coaches I've ever been around, and I mean that sincerely. It doesn't matter what type of player or talent they have. He always just figures out a way. And you know, obviously he's had teams with great talent, and there's been some other teams when you start the season and you kind of go, oh boy, that's going to be hard. And then there he is in the NCAA tournament, just like this year. I think a lot of people said that at the start of the year. And I remember telling a lot of my friends, I'm going, don't count him out, man. Don't count him out. He's going to figure out something. And, you know, I've been lucky. So my first year working in the office was his first year. And so I still saw it where there weren't a lot of fans there. And you know, obviously it was much worse before he started. But, yeah, I mean, all those stories that he talks about early, you could talk to someone from across the arena. You could say something to you. If you yell, they could hear you. And, you know, there just weren't very many people then. And it just slowly got bigger and bigger. And, you know, you have to give, you know, him credit, because, like, he like Coach McCarney, because they both were hired close to the same time, really did a good grassroots where they went out to the public and, you know, talked about their teams, introduced themselves, made them feel part of the community. And Coach Fennelly knew he had to do that to get people to start coming to games, because he knew that once he got him there, he would have a good product at some time. And he obviously really quick showed us that he had a good product. And, but yeah, I was fortunate to be there at the, you know, early years, and by year two or three, I mean, we're getting 5,000 people there. And, you know, he always talks about that famous game when we finally beat Iowa, where Stacey Freese went nuts. You know, she had just transferred from Iowa, and I was at that game, and I've never, you know, at that time, I'm like, I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen this many people for a women's basketball game. And we thought it was the coolest thing in the world, but then every game after that's been like that. So, yeah. But it was pretty neat to see it from the, you know, from the early beginning of his career, to see him turn this around. And I was lucky. I got a chance. I was at the UConn game in 1999. I worked the game. I was, you know, helping Aaron Rosecker, my good friend, who was the women's basketball contact communications person. And I went along to be her, you know, number two person assistant. So I was at that game, and, you know, you're sitting there going, that's one of the greatest games in Iowa State sports history. And that's when we kind of knew that this program has arrived, and it really hasn't fallen off since then.
So you started at Iowa State at roughly the same time I did, but I was as an undergrad.
Okay.
And the game that I remember going and watching for the women was the Texas Tech in Hilton. I think it was maybe 97, 98, maybe. Yeah, I can't remember. I think they were number four or something. They were very highly rated.
And that was one of those big, huge wins early on. Yes, I know exactly what game you're talking about.
So I remember that one, and I would go to games because I used to play some pickup ball with those ladies at the rec center back in the day. So, you know, I've been kind of paying attention, even though I don't live in town anymore since then, because it's, you know, the atmosphere was pretty incredible for that game.
Yeah, I think that game was there's a huge blizzard. And so a lot of people didn't think they were going to have a good crowd. And, you know, it was like 3,000 people showed up. And just to show you how times have changed, in order to get people into the stands back then, they had church night, which meant if you brought your church bulletin, you got in for, I don't know if it was free, but you got like and that's what they kind of had to do to get people to start coming. And it worked. And once again, like I said earlier, I mean, he just wanted to get you in the door, and then he was going to keep you there. You know, that was the whole point when he first started. And obviously, we don't have to do promotions like that anymore. So,
no, not at all.
Yeah,
for sure. So you got to experience a lot of really I'm going to call it the early rebuilding of Iowa State athletics, because it really was that late 90s.
Yep.
The decisions that got made at that time about coaching and everything else that really have gotten us to where we are today as an athletic department, because it became more serious. I think the university started to invest more and get more serious about it. But how did you actually get to Iowa State? You know, where did you come from? How did that happen?
Yeah, I grew up in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and I'll try not to make this really long, but
it's totally fine.
Okay. my dad, okay, I'll start from the beginning. My dad played baseball at Iowa State and was an all Big Eight pitcher. So, and then my dad played it, like, you know, 1 year in the minor leagues and then got into coaching. And he later became the head golf coach at UNI, Northern Iowa. So I grew up in a huge athletic family. My dad played basketball. I love basketball. I love golf. And even though my dad taught and coached at UNI, we were always a Cyclone family because he played baseball at Iowa State. So even though I went to all these UNI games, and I did enjoy UNI athletics, don't get me wrong, deep down I was always a Cyclone. And we kind of semi had to hide it because he was coaching at UNI. But I started diving into Iowa State athletics when I was a young kid. We would listen to Pete and Eric, you know, all the time. You know, my dad was traveling a lot because he was coaching, but whenever there was a weekend, he was around. We were listening to basketball, listening to football games. And I'm guessing about, you know, I was like 13, 14 years old. That's when Johnny Orr started turning the program around. And I mean, it was over after that. I mean, it was like 100% diehard Cyclone. I lived and breathed Iowa State athletics, and, you know, followed it, tried to watch every game I could. So I ended up going to UNI to play golf at UNI, and I wasn't good enough to play at Iowa State. So, but when I got done, the first thing I did was go to grad school at Iowa State, which I wish I would have gone there in the first part. So basically, I'm a UNI grad, grew up at you know, in Cedar Falls, but we were always a Cyclone family, and I always wanted to work at Iowa State. And it was kind of funny because, like, when I was in high school and college, I was always into numbers and stats, and I liked to write, and I liked to, you know, I was always telling people how amazing these Iowa State athletes are. And even though no one would know, because I'm living in Eastern Iowa where everything's Hawk, and so no one cared. Sure.
Yeah.
No one paid attention. And I was always trying to promote Iowa State athletics, even though I wasn't getting paid for it. So, and then when I got to grad school at Iowa State, I was lucky that, Tom Crochelle, who was, he was the director of the sports information office at Iowa State. I walked into his office and I said, I'll work for free. I just want to, I think I want to do this. And just give me a chance. And he did. And I just dove in, and that was 1995, and I never left. I never left. And it was always something I wanted to do. And I got lucky. I always tell people I got lucky because, you know, I mean, this is really what I wanted to do, and I'm still doing it.
I just love stories like that where you kind of make your own way and get and you know somebody and the piece of time just happened at the right time and things like that. Sounds like you were up in Ames and graduating about the same time I was. I graduated in 95.
Okay.
In 94. So December of 94. So we were about up there about the same time. I find it interesting that you just went into the office and you talked to him. I was telling a story. I had been looking for a job for the last 6 or 7 months, and the amount of hoops that you have to jump through to get a job. And I did apply at a couple of jobs even at Iowa State, and how hard that was to even get through the screening process and things like that. And just a story like yours, I just think to myself and go, that would never happen now. Like that, you know, nobody's ever going to be able to do that again because just the way the system is. And that sometimes it's a shame.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually a grad student, so I really wasn't getting paid much, you know, but still that opened the door for me. There's no doubt about that. That opened the door. I worked 2 years as a grad student. And once again, I got lucky. I got my master's in 97. And so I was like, well, I guess I got to start looking for jobs. I got to start looking for jobs in sports information. And I was applying at some schools. And then I found out that there was an internship that they just started at Iowa State in the sports information office. And it opened. And my boss said, hey, do you want it? So I took it, you know, and I remember this vividly. It was 1997, and technically I was full-time, you know, and I made $16,000 a year. And I was the happiest person in the world.
You were rolling in money, right?
I was the happiest person in the world. I could care less. And of course we're working 60, 70 hours a week, you know,
right.
Which that's part of the business. And I was just so happy, and I got my foot in the door. And then after a year, that job was kind of promoted to a full-time position. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I always tell people I lucked out, because we all know that in everything in life, it's timing. Some people are very, very talented and they don't get good timing. And I was lucky that kind of things just kind of always played out and worked out where I could stay at Iowa State. Because it really was the only place I really wanted to do this at.
Sure.
So I can't remember which department he worked in, but did you know Bill Smith?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So he's now at Bryant University, yeah. I think, as the athletic director.
And he's been at Bryant for a long time now.
Quite a while. Yeah. Yep. I'd say he was there at that time. He lived across the street from a friend of mine, and we used to sit around and drink beer now and again. But that would have been about that time. There were a lot of super nice people in the department. And I assume there still are, but you know, back then it was, you could call. Well, heck, I called Tim Floyd one time, and he returned my call. You know, it's like, you know, things like that.
Can you do that now? Because I'd like to get him on the pod.
I mean, that's pretty tough.
I don't think coaches have their numbers listed anymore.
Right?
Yeah, right. You used to be able to do that, and times have changed for sure.
Well, I always heard the story when I first got here, or you know, Johnny Orr just retired, and there was always the story that you would call over to the basketball office, and Johnny would answer basketball. And, and you're like, you think, I mean, Coach Otzenberger's not answering that phone.
Right.
Matt, Coach Campbell's not answering the football office phone. But that's just the time. That's the way it was. That's the way it was back then, you know, but then again, you know, Jamie Pollard, who is the greatest AD, I'll go to my grave, the greatest AD in Iowa State history. You know, we have our staff meeting, as we start a new year every year. And, you know, Jamie started in '05. And, you know, I'd worked there 10 years before he started, but he always talks about his first staff meeting. There was 65 people working in the athletic department. And this last staff meeting had 200, over wow. 200 over. And that's how much we've grown in, you know, 19 years. You know, and you know, there's over 200 employees in our department when there was about 50, 60 when he first started 19 years ago.
So you get that job, you're working as a grad student. What is the grunt work that you're getting stuck with? Because clearly you're not getting the glorified portions of that job, right? So what are some of the grunt works that you had to do just starting off?
Well, you name it.
Right.
And I gotta, you know, it's interesting because like technology has evolved, I mean, so drastically since then. And I don't consider myself an old person, but I guess I am, because when I tell these stories to my coworkers who are much younger than I am, they look at me and they have this glazed over, they don't even know what I'm talking about. And you're like, yeah, when I first started, we did not have an email account in our department. When a game ended, I had to fax the box score to the media. And that sometimes took 2 hours because you had to individually fax these box scores to the media. Because that was the only way they were getting the information about the game. And, you know, that's grunt work. You know, you're talking about when you're hosting a game, once again, there's no internet, there's no social media, there's no ticker, right? The only way that anyone's finding out what's going on in the game is that they got to actually call a phone number that's, you have a phone on press row or in the press box, and you call that number and you just pick it up and answer and you tell them the time and score. And that's how people got information back in the 80s and 90s. And one of my funniest stories is that when I first started in the office, my first year working football for Iowa State would have been the 95 fall season. Okay. So that was Troy Davis's breakout year. That was that, you know, cause he was actually on the team in 94 and he didn't play much. Remember that whole story. And then, you know, Coach McCartney first year, and then boom, here comes Troy Davis. Right. So you have to remember, no one even knew who he was, right? Coming into that year, no one even knew who Troy Davis was. And then he has 291 yards in the opener against Ohio. And then 2 games later, he has 302 yards against UNLV. So now everyone's just going crazy of like, who is this Troy Davis from Iowa State? Who is this guy? Because our games aren't on television. They're not on TV. You know, you don't get, you know, what you see today on how to get the word out on athletes like you do now. So, for example, my job for 2 years in the football press box was to answer the phone and give updates on what Troy Davis is doing live in that game. Because, you know, you didn't have, once again, you didn't have that ticker that's plugged into your laptop that's sending out stats simultaneously to the whole world, right? That didn't exist. We were doing manual stats back then. There was not computer stats. So we were doing stats by hand. And then, so my job all day, all game, was to answer the phone and say, and I'm not making this up. It was, the phone rang off the hook because everyone wanted to know what Troy Davis was doing. And so the phone rang, I go, Iowa State press box. Yeah, how many carries and yards does Troy Davis have? Yeah, 17 carries for 85 yards. Thanks. Okay, bye. Rings. Iowa State press box. Yeah, how many carries and yards? I did that the whole game. But that was the only way we got information. That was the only way. And then obviously in the game minute, then you fax everything out. So life's changed dramatically.
Yeah, I remember. So I coached high school and stuff in early 2000s. And we would fax stuff in, but there were certain stations or places that we couldn't fax it into. And then you had to call it in and read the entire.
Yep. We did that too. Yeah. I mean, you know, pre-digital cameras, you had to scan every photo that was sent to you. I mean, that was so long and hours and working, you know, because like you'd have to order prints from film. And then you have to scan all the photos for the headshots that you use and all your publications. I mean, there was a lot of work that doesn't exist anymore, obviously. You know, I mean, technology has been a blessing and it's also caused problems because now it's almost sometimes too much information. But, you know, it's a lot easier job per se. But now that because the information is so easily accessible, now it's almost 24/7. You have to produce the information. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So there's still a little bit of a, you know, I get sentimental over the good old days. It was a little more mom and pop shop, you know, and it wasn't as in your face like it is now.
But, well, so speaking of getting information out to people, the reason I know who you are is because of your Twitter account. And so you're constantly putting photos and stuff out, the archival type stuff. Like, do you spend a lot of time looking for that, or is it just something where you're looking at something else and you see something, you think, oh, that'd be great, I put it out? Or like, how do you decide what you put on there, and where do you even find all that stuff?
Well, this may take a while. So I just want to say, disclaimer, I never once in my life did I say I want to be famous on Twitter. Never. In fact, I tell people all the time, if you follow me on Twitter, you're probably going to be disappointed, because I'm never going to talk about my life. I'm never going to give you my opinion.
Why you're on here, Mike.
No, I know, but I just remember one day, and I can tell you the story. I remember.
No, that's all right.
I was reluctant to start a Twitter account. I guess it's X now, right? I was reluctant. I didn't want to do it. You know, obviously, when I was director of the office, I remember vividly this happening. It was 2009, and we go, holy smokes, we gotta create accounts for our sport teams. And so we did. And, you know, and once again, you know, you look back and you're going, I'm not taking credit for this, because there's no credit to be taken. We had to evolve and advance the way the technology was going. And I remember we were sitting in the office one day, all of us we're going, this Twitter thing is kind of getting big. We better start doing this, Facebook, all that stuff. Right. And we were very fortunate, because we just stumbled upon this. We said, let's just make sure we got a brand, Cyclone FB, Cyclone MBB. So, you know, we want to be consistent of what this is. And once again, this took like 5 minutes of us talking. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. But now you look back, I'm glad we have that. Our sport accounts have that brand. And I like it that, you know, most teams use their first name, you know, like, you know, instead of Iowa State. But we were unique, because there's no other Cyclone, you know, and we wanted to make sure that we got that before anyone else did. So anyway, so we got those accounts, and now we're like two more years in, and we're running our accounts, and someone goes, you gotta get on it on your person. I don't want to do that. I don't want anything to do with this. I don't like this world. So I reluctantly got on it in 2011. And you know, I'm like a lot of people, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, and I don't do anything. And I remember this vividly. It was like 2012. I noticed there was this account, and I'm a big history guy, nostalgia. I collect.
Sure.
And Sports Illustrated had an account called SI Vault. And all they did was show old photos of famous athletes. That's all they did. And there was nothing else to it. And I remember saying to myself, you know, we have some great photos in our archives that I see, no one else sees. And I think our fans would like to see them, or just share them, because they make me happy. They make me happy when I see them. You know, I'm a very nostalgic person. And when I see old photographs of Iowa State athletes, it makes me feel good. So I just said to myself, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to put up old photos, and hopefully Iowa State fans will enjoy it. But to answer your question, Aaron, there is no, I don't sit at home, go, oh, I got to do this week. Nothing. It's just on a whim. If I see a photo, if I run across it, oh, that's a cool photo, I'll post that, period. That's all I do. And I'm lucky, because I have access to our archives, and I helped, do an online database for all of our photos when I was working in athletes communications. That was a big goal of ours. And so we started gathering all these great photos we have and making it easy, accessible for us to get if we needed them. And it was a hard and long process, because you have to realize that we had so many negatives, you know, and obviously some people that are young won't understand what the hell I'm saying here, but we had so many photo negatives, photo prints, and photo slides.
Yeah.
And so now what you have to do is you have to digitize those. And there are so many great photos in there, but it was a process. We spent like 2-3 years digitizing all of our slides, prints, and negatives. And so we found photos that, you know, we didn't even know we had. It was awesome. It was like a gold mine of stuff. And then we made it where we can have it, where if we need it, we have it at our fingertips now. So basically what I do is I see a good photograph. I like it. I think someone else may like it. I post it. That's basically all it is. It's nothing much to it.
So the real question I want to ask is where is this at? And when are we going to get this back on the field?
Man, and that's one of the ones I dug out. I don't want to take credit, but that's a photo that I found about 5 years ago, and I literally like I celebrated for like about an hour after I found this photo.
This might be the most popular thing on Twitter when it comes to nostalgia. It's crazy. Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it, is that I would just run across photos like this, like, oh my God, this is amazing. And you know, that photo right there, I can tell you exactly. It was on a slide and it was hidden in a cabinet in our office for literally 20 years, buried. And I pulled these slides out one day and we were able to digitize them. And when I saw this photo in all of its glory, I like, oh, I gotta put that out.
Right.
But to answer your question, I don't know if those are ever coming back. But how beautiful! That's just the most gorgeous photo.
I'm just saying, Cy in that on a gator, leading the team out. I mean, the other team would have no chance whatsoever.
No, I know, and I don't know what year it was when those became not in vogue. I mean, back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, those were the coolest things in the world. And I remember like. Late 90s, no one had them anymore. I do have a funny story. I remember when I first got here, we still had one. Now, it wasn't that one because we had changed our logo with the, you know, blender size, what they call it, whatever. That was our logo right when I first started. So we actually had one of those with that logo. I don't know if people know that. That did exist. Well, the damn thing didn't work. I mean, the golf cart didn't work. It was broken. And so just sitting in the corner of Jack Trice Stadium, and I remember it was like I remember this vividly. It was the first year of the Big 12. So that was 96 season. And Big 12, you know, back then a lot of Big 12 stuff was on Fox. You remember the early years of the Big 12 was on Fox Sports Network and Fox. So Fox sent a huge crew out to each school in the league to do a football preview. You know, they sent their talent. You know, they stayed 2-3 days, interviewed a bunch of our players, and I was working in the office, so I was helping them. Well, one of the things they wanted to do, they saw the helmet cart, and they go, hey, we want to drive that around. And I look at him, I go, it doesn't work. You know, like, I'm sorry, it doesn't work. He goes, oh, really? But no, we got to get a shot of us driving that talking. And I go, I mean, I don't tell you, it doesn't work. Well, anyway, we went down. And it was on the pavement. You know how Jack Trice Stadium has that concrete way out, you know, right next to the stands.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out it really wasn't that heavy. So they did this shot talking in that cart, previewing Iowa State football. And if anyone can go find this, I will die because I want to see it.
You know what? I actually found a photo.
You found it's it?
Blurred. But like, let me.
Well, in 1996, they had this preview of the Fox crew talking, and they're in the cart. I'm pushing the cart so it's moving. I mean, I you know, they obviously don't have me in the camera, but I'm pushing. They're filming it really, and you know, and I'm actually pushing the cart 100 yards, and that's how there it is
back there behind Troy. I never would have ever noticed that until you just said something.
Yep, that's it.
And there's the tertiary blue that everybody just loves. The
yeah, yep.
And there was another one too. Well,
go back there on the right hand side and see to your
right. Oh, yeah, right here.
The photo a little bit better with the two players.
There we go.
Oh, yeah. So that, yeah. So that was probably, I'm guessing that was 96 or that had to be 96 or 97.
That's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, I know that was Media Day and they take those photos at Media Day. Exactly. That's it. Now, I think by 98, that sucker was gone. And I don't know what happened to it.
Man, I'd love to know where those are at.
Yeah, they're somewhere.
That's got to be a story. And then I can't find the photo, but there's a photo of that original one. And in the background, it looks like some kind of mini sports car back there as well.
Yep.
That I'm just saying we need to resurrect those and get, forget beer in the stadium, Jamie. That's what I want. I want those. I want those carts back.
I don't have a complaint with that at all. You know.
So, so let's take a break. We'll get a word from our sponsor, Revelton, and then we'll come back with Mike.
Why take the best corn in the world and make it into fuel when you could make it into whiskey? That's the question that launched Revelton, Iowa's most visible and fastest growing distillery. Owners Rob and Christy Taylor embrace the grain-to-glass philosophy, sourcing ingredients locally and overseeing on-premises production and bottling at their facility in Osceola. One sip, and you'll agree that Revelton's handcrafted whiskeys, gins, and vodkas are the best you've ever tasted. And with the launch of their rye whiskey, made with 100% Iowa-grown rye and corn, and their new bourbon coming soon, there's more Revelton to love than ever. Iowa's own Revelton Distillery. ReveltonDistillery.com.
All right, and we're back. Again, big, huge thanks to our sponsor, Revelton Distilling Company, Rob and Christy Taylor. Check those guys out down in Osceola and also in your local grocery store. So, Mike, what's the job that you're doing now? So you're the head of the Cyclone Letterman's Club. So are you coordinating some of these Hall of Fame things? Are you what all entails that particular job?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, yes, we are in charge of the Hall of Fame, which is so much fun. It's one of the big parts of our office is that we handle everything Hall of Fame, which means we take we have our selection committee. We form the selection committee. We take care of the meetings. And when a class is inducted, we take care of all the promotion. And we take care of getting a hold of the inductees and taking care of them when they come back and putting on that event, which is one of the marquee events of our athletics department. And basically, everything that goes on in honoring our past with the Hall of Fame is a huge part of the job. But we also do reunions, and we take care of our past athletes and make them feel welcome when they come back. We have a letter winners club, which they can get membership with, and they have benefits. If they join the club, they get benefits. It's a great way for them to connect with their old friends, old teammates. Our job also takes care of all awards for current student athletes with letter plaques, letter jackets, then also letter rings, and then any other type of championship rings. Our office will take care of ordering the rings for example, one of the jobs I got to do the next 2-3 weeks is help out our wrestling team with their Big 12 wrestling, Big 12 wrestling championship rings. But basically I always kind of tell people my old job was promoting our current student athletes and our current coaches. And now I kind of just switched gears where I kind of feel I'm helping to promote our former student athletes and let people remember how amazing they were and that they're always welcome. And, I get it that it's a two-way street. A lot of athletes have to stay connected. Some athletes don't, and that's that's just what they choose to do. Sure. But if they want to stay connected with our club, I'm the guy I'm there for them. We help them. If they're coming back, we try to take care of them and all that stuff. And it's great. I love it because not only was I a fan, obviously, like I said before, I knew all about the history even before I started working. And now, I mean, most of these people I'm dealing with were athletes while I was working here. So I know them. And so that's a benefit that I have. And it's been great. It's been a good transition for me. I like it. I love telling stories about our past. We've had amazing teams, amazing athletes come through our place. And I want to make sure that people don't forget that. And that's kind of a big goal of what I do in that office.
So then big news, I think fairly recently. And I want to know, did you get invited Have you signed the Purdy's up into the Letter Winners Club yet? And did you get to go to their wedding?
No, I did not go to the wedding. but yeah, yes, Purdy is a member of our Letter Winners Club. There's no doubt about that. So.
I was just teasing. I saw that on the news the other day. He's popular enough now and big enough news now that his wedding was getting reported. So
yes, it was. Yes, it was. And I was blessed. I was the football contact, that I was in charge of football promotion for our office all four of Brock's years. So, I mean, how blessed was that? I mean, it was amazing to work with him and be a part of that program during that time. And, I always tell people ask me, what was Brock like? And I go, well, everything that you've seen that he is real life. That's who he is. He's one of the nicest, most genuine human beings I've ever met. And also a flat out baller.
Yeah.
And I mean, we were so blessed to watch him play. And, and I just remember telling people, because let's call it like this. There's been some years that haven't been that good in Iowa State football since I've been here. I've been through some ups and downs and seen some great teams, seen some teams that weren't so great. And, think about how many amazing quarterbacks that have played in this league in the last, 29 years. Right. And I don't know how many times we'd be in a game and I'd see opposing quarterback make a throw and I'm going, geez, that's an NFL throw.
Yeah.
And I don't know if sometimes we just don't have a guy that can do that. And I remember for the 4 years that we had Purdy, I remember saying, that's an NFL throw. I said that many times up in the press box when Brock would make a throw. I go, that's an NFL throw. We got a guy that's doing that now. We had a guy that is making throws that we haven't seen out of a Cyclone in a long time.
Yeah.
So
you say that you like to tell the Letterman's stories and whatever. What's a story that hasn't been told about a team or an individual that you would love to be able to do?
You mean just like an old
we've had teams that have been recognized or whatever. What's a team or an organization, a player or whoever that you feel like, man, now it's time to tell their story?
Well, that's hard because I just think about each athlete here has their own individual story, and you see them come through as scared freshmen. I've seen so many athletes this person, I don't know. And then all of a sudden 4 years later, they're all American and you watch them grow. I mean, this is just an example because Melvin just got inducted to our Hall of Fame. I remember when Melvin came on his visit, Coach McDermott was our head coach, and we had a game that night, and he was there at the game, and I'm watching him shoot, and he wasn't making very many, he's just shooting. And I remember asking, one of our assistants, I go, yeah, so tell me about this guy, Melvin. He's not really highly recruited. He's kind of a tweener. He's 6'5", 6'6". He's athletic, but not like ultra athletic. Not a great shooter. And I'm going, well, what's he going to do here then? Okay. And so we get him and I'm like, okay, I don't know if this guy's there. Holy smokes. What I didn't see was, what I didn't see was the heart that, and the tenacity that guy had. He did not want to lose. And it didn't take long to figure out what this guy was all about. And so if you would have talked to me that day when he came on his visit and you would have told me that Melvin Edgerton was going to be an All-American and Big 12 Player of the Year, I would have said you're crazy. But by sheer determination and will and heart, he made himself one of the greatest players in Iowa State history. And there's a lot of those like Melvin. I mean, you asked me, that's just one.
Yeah.
I just remember, I mean, there's been a lot of stories like that here, obviously, with, players that have been overlooked. And, and he did everything right. As you and I both know, you guys are huge Cyclone fans. I take you watch Melvin all the time. I mean, I think about those last 2 years when he was on our team, when he got every rebound.
Yeah.
He got every rebound. It didn't matter. He was only 6'5". He would always get the put back when he needed it, you know, and he was always guarding the toughest offensive, you know, the best offensive player on the other team. He was doing all the dirty work for a lot of those really good teams at the Fred Hoiberg era. And I like to think that, you know, if you talk to George Niang, he would say playing with Melvin Edgem his first 2 years is probably one of the greatest things that ever happened to him. George could just do his thing and Melvin did all the dirty work. And obviously as George matured, you know, he obviously developed into doing those things that Melvin was doing, you know, when he was, when he was an upperclassman. But, Melvin's always going to be one of my favorites. I always say that he helped turn around this program back to where it should be, because people kind of forget that, you know, we went 7 years without making the tournament.
Yeah.
Without even making even a postseason tournament. And Melvin had a big influence in that.
That was probably one of my favorite teams, was him and DeAndre Kane. I always envisioned DeAndre as just the dad, like the old man on that team that was like, okay, I'm going to show you young guys how to do it. And man, what an opportunity that was with that team until George broke his foot.
Well, yeah, it'll go down as one of the best teams ever. There's no doubt about that. I mean, Monte was a freshman, right?
Yeah.
Matt Thomas was a freshman. There's two NBA players.
Yep.
George was a sophomore NBA player. Naz NBA player was a sophomore I think he was a sophomore.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you throw in Melvin, you know, who didn't make the NBA, but literally is one of the, people forget that Melvin Edgem has a great chance to make the Canadian Olympic team this summer, you know, and they just beat USA this last summer. They beat Tyrese's team.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that tells you how good Melvin Edgem is. And the guy's 33 years old now. And in basketball, that's getting up there, and he's still doing it. He's bringing it. And then, yeah, DeAndre, I mean, what a player. I mean, that guy, when you needed a hoop, he got it for you. You know, that team was special. I did men's basketball for 13 years, and that was the first year I didn't do it. but I still obviously was working and helping out, but yeah, that was a fun team to watch. And I still think it's one of the greatest big ifs in Cyclone history if George Niang doesn't make
it. Yeah, for sure.
So
we probably need to think about getting to our Wintrust mortgage question, Chris, because this isn't going to be a super long episode, in part because, as we've already dated the podcast, the wrestling team just won a championship. And a little bit later here, we're hoping to have another Cyclone championship to celebrate.
You bet.
So we're recording this just a little before that, and I think all of us want to be able to cop a squat and pay attention to that here shortly. So Chris is going to play a commercial and then ask you the Wintrust mortgage question after that.
Yeah. All right, let's get a word from Kyle Lehman over at Wintrust Mortgage.
Are you in the market for a new house and unsure of the mortgage process? Want to know that you have someone looking out for you? Kyle Lehman from Wintrust Mortgage is a down-to-earth, knowledgeable lender who can be there for you in your corner. He can work with you in any of the 50 states and is just what you need to expand your home search. Kyle will work with you through the entire process with little to no work from you. Take the worry of the mortgage process out of the equation so that you can focus on looking for your dream home. Contact Kyle at www.wintrust.com/Kyle-Lehman or call him at 515-473-0546.
All right. And again, Kyle Lehman is available there for all your mortgage needs. If you're looking for a new house and you want a lender, go to Kyle. I refinanced with him. He saved me a ton of money. So Kyle's legit. Even though he's a Hawkeye fan, I love Kyle. So, Mike, our Wintrust mortgage question of the pod is, do you have a magic time machine and you can go back 10 years and meet yourself 10 years ago? What piece of advice are you going to give Mike Green?
You know, probably not get too high on the highs and too low on the lows. You know, sometimes as I've gotten older, I'm starting to mellow of not let losses affect me. I mean, let's call it as we're all fans, and it took a while. But I would tell, that would be one of the advice I'd say is, like, you know, we all want Iowa State to win so bad, but it is just a game. And, you know, there's life moves on. There's going to be another game the next day. You can't let it affect you. And sometimes early in my career, after a tough loss, there was a couple of days it took a while. And, you know, I wish I could go back and tell myself just to relax. You'll get another chance next week or in basketball 2 days later or whatever. That's what I would do.
I think that's perfectly said.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
I have two questions. They're pretty short, easy questions here, Mike. One, now that we're best friends, can you get us a seat at Cyclone Trivia?
That's right.
Because I will fly back from Seattle to go to that someday. And then, now I've already forgot the first one because I was so excited, or the second one because I was so excited about the answer to the first one.
Well, if you want me to, unfortunately, the answer to that is that's going to be hard. As you all know, that the waiting list for that is really
it's long. Crazy.
It's nuts, and it's such a great event, and I'm lucky. So when we started that in 07, and I'll be honest with you, I don't have anything to do with running that's that. Okay. I actually play. I played every year. And
I got a bet that you're pretty good at it, I bet.
You guys do pretty well. We won a couple of times. Won a couple of times. But I remember I think 07 was the first year we did it, and there was 20 tables. And it was only like a third of Hilton Coliseum. And every year just kept getting bigger. And finally, I think it was about 6 years ago, they put a cap on it. And then they have a waiting list. So I wish I could help you. Sooner or later, people do drop out. So I guess just keep plugging away. Maybe you'll get in there someday. So,
I did think of my second question. A couple weeks ago, we had a Tim Kreisman on.
Yeah,
talking about stuff, and we were trying to convince him to have a basically live pod for him and his teammates just telling stories and stuff.
That would be so worth watching.
We want to have you come back and moderate that because you know how to deal with all those guys in the groups.
Yeah, because Tim would have been early, I think early 80s, right? Early mid-80s.
Yeah, mid-80s, yeah. Before.
But I'm guessing all those guys are probably members and you know them all.
Yeah, no, I do. And, you know, I see these guys a lot, and that was the Jim Kreiner era. Did he tell you any Jim Kreiner stories?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Him and Keith Schrage. Keith Schrage was in at the end of November. He's hooked me up with a few other guests. But, yeah, we've heard some stories.
Yep. Probably not a great era of Iowa State football, but I'm sure there were some funny stories during
there that were game. Yes,
and there were some good players on those teams. I do
absolutely to, there were absolutely there was
on those teams.
Anything
to talk Iowa State athletics, I'm in.
All right, well, we have one last quick segment and then we'll get out of here. This is a more of a charity segment that we do. Steph Copley, who I'm sure you know, was on the pod a few years ago and was talking, and my co-host would not shut up. So she told him to STFU so that she could get her point across. So we decided, in honor of Steph, we would ask people to go donate to the Young Women's Resource Center. So we're going to play a quick clip from Steph. And then when we come back, Aaron and I have to shut up. And you get carte blanche. You can say whatever you want, and we can't react. So we'll be right back, and we'll get a word from Steph about the Young Women's Resource Center.
Hey, everybody. It's Steph Copley, the woman behind the STFU segment on the Old Man Strength podcast. When I told the guys I wanted to sponsor this segment, they recommended that I make a charitable donation instead. So that's what I did. I chose the Young Women's Resource Center in Des Moines, Iowa. They're a nonprofit that supports, educates, and advocates for girls and young women ages 10 to 24. Their whole goal is to make sure that these young women become strong, self-confident, and successful. And if you know me at all, you know that aligns with my goals as well. If you're interested and would like to donate, check them out at YWRC.org and donate today. And remember, don't forget to STFU and listen every once in a while. Thanks.
So you've whatever the subject is, it doesn't matter. This is just if you think the world needs to hear something, that's what this segment is for you, Mike.
So I got you. I'm sorry.
Take the floor.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. This has been a great talk. I've enjoyed it. But yeah, basically to everyone out there, keep rooting on the Cyclones, man. We've come a long way. It's an athletic department that continues to grow. And I know that we're in, you know, I would say maybe some trying times with the way college athletics is going, but I always tell people we have the greatest athletic director. He's going to keep guiding this ship. We're going to be fine. And we have coaches that are top notch, and obviously the proof is in how they're performing right now. And yeah, basically working at Iowa State for athletics this long, I've had a chance to meet some of the greatest athletes and greatest coaches in this state. And it's been an amazing journey, and I've been really, really blessed, and I never, ever take it for granted.
Amen. Well, we're gonna hop off here so we can watch Audi Crooks and their team just absolutely demolish Texas for one last time.
Let's go
and kick them out of the league. Mike, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. I hope that you'll allow me to pinch your ear every once in a while and ask a question or ask for some help. But I really appreciate you coming on. I know this was kind of short notice, but I think a lot of people got a lot out of it. So,
my pleasure, and it was great to meet you guys both. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Aaron, you got anything else to say before we close out?
Horns down.
Perfect. We'll just end it with that. All right. Check out the rest of the podcast on the Three Beards Media Network. And with that, we are out of here.